Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome to Get Yourself the Job. As you may notice, this is not Jennifer Hill today. My name's Allison Garrido, and I'm really, really happy to be guest hosting for Jennifer. So thank you so much for joining me today. I'm a career coach and regular guest host for Jennifer when she's traveling. And today I'm really excited to have a good friend and fellow coach, Judith Gordon. So Judith is an emotional intelligence and performance coach. And she and I met just over 2 years ago when she gave a talk at a really amazing women's networking event. Her talk focused on the four D's of your to-do list, which were telling people when they're looking at their list and not sure how to handle it, you can either do the thing, defer, delegate, or delete. And that really, really left an impression on me. And it's something I still share with clients and friends today who are struggling with that to-do list. So it was really logical when I was thinking about who would come on to the show while I was guest hosting to have Judith, because Judith is really the perfect person to talk about that being productive versus being busy conundrum that many of us face in job search and beyond. So I want to take this time now and welcome Judith to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted.
Awesome. It's such a pleasure to have you. So let's get right into the questions. I mentioned a little bit about how you and I met, but could you share a little bit about your career path and what brought you to this work?
Sure. It's interesting because I consider my career path a bit of a wacky one and not a straight line for sure. And I found it very reassuring, by the way. Somebody once said to me that no career path is a straight line. And I found that very reassuring, and perhaps the listeners will find that reassuring too, as we move from perhaps from position to position, or things aren't going quite the way we anticipated when we thought we were embarking on our career. And so the beauty of it is that everything leads to something new and exciting. So in my case, I started out in science. I studied biology and physiology, and I was in graduate school and ended up transferring to law. And the reason was that I realized I'm really much more of a people person. I loved the subject, the subject matter of what I was studying, but I needed people. And I transferred to law and practiced for a few years, and then found that I was running into another roadblock, if you will, or crisis of, wait, this isn't quite working for me either. What's not working here? And so I started on a path of exploration into emotional intelligence and mediation and reconnected with science. And it turned out that all of those things just fascinated me. And I was able to pull them all together and turn them into my coaching practice and help others who were experiencing dissatisfaction or just confusion in their careers. And so all of those pieces came together.
That's amazing. And the work that you do is so needed, right? People are really struggling these days with how do I do the juggle? How do I make sense of it all? How am I not just kind of spinning on the hamster wheel?
Yeah, we're incredibly distracted. Technology can be our friend, but it's not always our friend. And I think that what's happened to some degree is that instead of us being in charge of technology and recognizing that this is a tool and something that we can use to help us, we have become reactive. And we're following technology and letting technology tell us what to do when. And so we're constantly checking in on social media or responding to email that pops up or answering calls or texts. And that distracts us. And not only does that distract us, but it creates a lot of stress, because a distracted brain is an anxious brain. And so a lot of people are feeling high anxiety and not realizing that one of the reasons that we're feeling so anxious is the way we're interacting with our technology.
Yeah, I had a really impactful moment in my career, work, life balance with technology when I turned off all of my email alerts on my phone. And I couldn't believe the calm that that brought to me. And it's, you know, there was never kind of an urgent email coming in, or there was rarely an urgent email coming in. But having that message pop up every time, it was like I was on high alert, even if it was a, you know, a silly coupon deal to the movies. I was reacting the same way as if it was, you know, oh my gosh, a client needs me. They have an interview in 2 hours. And that just distinction now of me saying, I'm going to click the Gmail button and open my email, as opposed to the email controlling me or this information just flying at me, was a huge, huge adjustment. And it really helped my well-being.
Yeah, well, you did two things that manage stress, two very powerful things. The first one is that when we get a notification, be it a text or an email alert or any notification, we actually get a cortisol spike, which is a stress hormone, right? So that we're actually getting a spike of stress. We're responding in a stressful manner. It's an alert, and that is what they're called, alerts. But our body responds as if there's some sort of danger. So the first thing that you did was so important. By turning off those alerts, you literally physiologically created more calm in your body. But the second thing that you did that showed that you were managing your stress is that you took charge. And when we take charge, when we have a greater sense of control, then that also lowers our stress. And so by deciding that you're going to check in on your email and that you're the one in charge and that you're proactive about your email instead of being reactive, that is a very powerful way of managing both your time and your productivity. So kudos to you, Allison.
Thank you. I didn't have any idea why I was doing it. Like, those are all great things to learn. But for me, you know, it was just that this feels right. So it's nice to know that there is a lot more to it than, oh, maybe this is something I should do. And this is what worked for me. And I think so often we just throw things against the wall. And if they stick, it's like, this was a good thing for me. But it's so helpful to hear someone like you share the real science behind what's happening to our bodies and our brains as we tackle this never-ending to-do list.
Right, right. Well, you made another great point too, and that is that we do know intuitively what to do. Humans have a very strong intuitive sense, but if we don't make the intuitive concrete, then we don't always have those tools available to us when we need them. So by noticing what works for us and making them concrete, then we can reach out and grab them whenever we need them. So you did what you felt, which was perfect, and we have to give ourselves more credit than we often do. And that is that if something's working, go for it, keep doing it. And then noticing exactly what that is and making it concrete, knowing exactly what to do. So yes, we have that great intuitive power of knowing really what's best for us, even when we don't know exactly why.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. You know, I work with a lot of people in job search, and right, this show is about, you know, get yourself the job and helping people through that moment. So I do want to talk about productivity in job search, but you just brought something up that really struck a chord with me, which is making the intuitive concrete. So I have so many people who come to me and they say, this job wasn't the right job. I need to find something new. And almost always they had an inkling before they accepted the job. There were some red flags or things that didn't quite feel right to them, right, but they accepted the job anyways, right? Like, we push down that intuition so often. And I think it goes the other way too, where you think, oh, I think I could do this job, but I don't tick all the boxes, so maybe I shouldn't apply, right? Push down that intuition. How can we make intuition more concrete?
So I'm going to answer the first part first, and that is, how do we make, when we have a sense or an inkling or we see a red flag, how do we pay attention to that? And the truth is, by noticing it, by not just pushing it away, but asking ourselves, what is that about really? What am I experiencing? Is this something serious, or is this just, oh, it's familiar. I've seen this before. It's probably not so serious. But the way to manage that and the way to address it is to notice it and actually take it a couple of steps further. Identify it, name it. What is it about this? What is that red flag? So go beyond just the feeling, okay, I know this doesn't feel quite right, but what is it? What is it about the guy or the woman who's going to be my boss? What is it about the environment that didn't sit quite right with me? Maybe you walked in and the job was perfect, but nobody was smiling or it was really quiet and there was no energy around the place. So notice exactly what was the red flag. What was it that you didn't like? Or perhaps the individual who interviewed you, what was it about that person that was sending you a signal? So identifying exactly what it is. So take that feeling and put words to it, articulate what it is, and then make the decision as to whether it's serious enough to turn down the offer or to whether it's worthwhile to proceed. So that was the first part. The second part that you addressed has more to do with confidence. And it's very interesting. This is actually, there's a gender divide around this. Many women will not take a job or even apply for a job that they don't believe they have 100% of the qualifications for. And men will take a job that they have 50% of the qualifications for and figure out the rest. And so this often has to do with what is known in you know, in many industries in the world as imposter syndrome. Somebody's, you know, I've got these talents, I've got these qualifications, but people are going to find out that I'm not really as smart as I'm pretending to be. And this is something that plagues a lot of people in the world. I think that social media plays a role in this because we see people appearing to be so successful and to have figured it all out. And because most of us don't feel that way most of the time or all of the time, we think that, oh, they're going to find me out. So the second part of your question does have to do with this sense of confidence. And I would say to that and to all the listeners, I would encourage anyone listening to go beyond the qualifications listed in the job and think more about what have you got? What do you bring to the table that makes sense for you and this firm to connect? Because confidence is really just the willingness to act. And that willingness to act takes courage, right? So really to be confident is to be courageous. And so think about what talent do I have? Why am I putting myself out there, and how would this be a benefit to my potential employer? Think about it more in those terms rather than do I check all the boxes? Because it's really, at the end of the day, it's not about checking all the boxes. It's about do my talents fit this firm?
100%. And that's a great way to think of it. Is I oftentimes will tell people at the end of every bullet on that job description, you can whisper to yourself, or equivalent, right? Yes. So that gives you permission to say, like, it doesn't have to be perfect on this wish list, laundry list, in a job description. What is your or equivalent? And talk about that.
Oh, I love that. That's a great point. What is your or equivalent? And that's another way of noticing and acknowledging the talents that you have that you may not have thought of that were relevant or important. So that's great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know that was a little bit of a diversion from what we'd intended to talk about, but it's so important. And this all goes into how we show up for job search and otherwise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So how we're showing up everywhere.
Yeah. So when we do, we do think about job search, I work with a lot of people and know a lot of people who are looking for a job, but feeling really overwhelmed and saying, I have a job, I have a family, I have a life, and now I want to find a new job and I don't have time to search for a new job. And I hear the term, and I'll share my opinion on this term later, but looking for a job is a full-time job, right? So what weight that gives somebody, right? So now you've got two full-time jobs and the rest of your life. So how can people really get a handle on that?
What I would say to that is to break it down. First of all, getting a job is the ultimate goal, but what are the steps between now and getting that ultimate job that one needs to take to get there? And then ask yourself every day, what matters most today? What is one thing that I can do today that will advance my job search, that will advance my interest in this new direction, that will advance me? So what is that one thing? And maybe there are two or three things that you can do in a day. Some tasks are bigger, so you can only do one, but some tasks are smaller, and you might do two or three. So what matters most today? It's really about the high value tasks, those tasks that have meaning, that move our goals forward, that get us to where we want to go. And that's where we can distinguish between busy work and productivity. Because busy work, we can do a lot and be busy with a lot of things. But if they're not really serving us at the end of the day, getting us closer to that goal, then that's busy work. That's not being effective.
So spending that time on Indeed of just kind of like scrolling, that might be the busy work, the equivalent of some busy work in job search?
Well, I think that the first step is to identify what exactly are you interested in? What's interesting to you? And then looking for the position that piques your interest. And so scrolling might not be busy work. Scrolling might actually be fun and give you ideas about new jobs. Maybe you just know that you need a new job, but you don't know what. Maybe you just need a change and you haven't quite figured that out. And so that's when scrolling actually would be a good use of your time and a useful effort. But what I would suggest is giving that a time limit. Don't scroll for hours, scroll for 20 minutes at a time. Because once we start scrolling for too long, or we start doing any one single activity for too long, we tend to become less productive. So I always counsel clients to work in sprints and then take a short break, a mental break, and work in sprints. Those are that's a very productive way to work. So if, for example, you just know you need to get out of your current position, you want to make a change, but you don't know exactly what you want to do next, then a little combination of what do I love? What's interesting to me? What are the qualities that my next job needs to have? This was something that I did myself, and I've shared with others that have, and they've found it incredibly useful. They don't know exactly what they want to do next, but they know that how they want it to feel, what they want it to look like, what the qualities are. So some people want more autonomy, more flexibility. Others may need more structure or want set hours. What is it about your current position that's lacking or that you would like to see in your next position? That can be a very helpful tool as well.
Awesome. And I love that you use that example, because sometimes we feel like job search is not productive if we're not hitting that apply button, right? So that's not the only way to judge your job search success, because I could apply for, while we're on this radio show, I could be apply, click, 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 apply, apply, apply. And then I've applied for 15 jobs, but that might not be the best thing for my search if I haven't taken the time to know what it is that I want to do. I was just talking with a group about job search last night, and I talked to them about the spray and pray method. you just send your resume to everybody in the world. I won't even say everybody that'll look at it, because maybe people aren't looking at it, but that feels good because you've sent your resume out. But is that the best use of your time? Is your resume going to the right people for the right reasons? Some resumes that are a little bit more targeted, have the follow-up behind them, those will probably be a better use of your time than just the apply now, apply now, apply now.
Sure. And definitely taking that moment to think about what it is that would be interesting to you, because sending out your resume and getting another job that you might not want doesn't serve you at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And maybe it would be interesting to go a little further afield, try something new. You can't necessarily check all the boxes, but to our earlier point, you have something that you can bring to the table that they'll like. Oftentimes, if you interview employers, the reason they've hired a particular candidate doesn't have to do with their being able to check off all the boxes. It had to do with the way they think, a creative idea they brought to the table, or their willingness to just step up and say, you know what, I need a change, and I think this would work. Talk to me. And they like that. They like people who are willing to take that risk of stepping out of the box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot easier to do and much more welcome, I think, if you're starting to get to know people too a little bit before the job is posted, mm-hmm. right? Because if there's a job posted, it's almost like they've formed this box. And so it's still worth applying. But if they've got a couple people that tick the box, it might be harder to raise your hand. Whereas if you're talking to people, if you're having those networking conversations or people saying, oh, you've got to meet Judith, even if Judith doesn't seem like she ticks all the boxes or can fit into that tiny little hole that we've made, it might be still a conversation of like, oh, okay, well, I know that if she was recommended, she's somebody that I should have a chat with. And oftentimes I see jobs created around people as opposed to people fitting themselves into the parameters of a job.
Agree. Absolutely agree. Another reason that it's great to talk to people and get to know new people and see what they're doing is that you may land on something you hadn't thought of before, or find yourself in a position of a new job that you hadn't, we weren't aware of. Mm-hmm. So it is really useful. A lot of people don't like the word network, and mm-hmm. It feels like another thing they have to do. But what I often say is, if you think of network as socializing, mm-hmm. networking as socializing, and you like to socialize, then it's really not a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. There are many ways to talk about networking, and I know that you're an expert on that, Allison, so I'll leave it to you. But there are ways to make networking enjoyable and to really help you solidify what it is you're looking for and making your right next move.
Absolutely. It's having those conversations, right? Like you said, socializing, having that dream team of people that you can call if you need mm-hmm. something. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So can you say a little bit more about the sprints that you were talking about? Like, how many sprints should I be doing? What does that look like?
Yeah. So one of the ways that I work with clients is I use what I call the human design approach. And that is looking at how humans were designed, right? So our brains were actually designed to work in two states, a focused state and a diffuse state. So we can focus for a period of time. It could be 20, 30, 45 minutes. We can focus for up to about 90 minutes before the brain starts to need a bit of a mental break. It's because mental work drains the brain of the resources and the nutrients that it uses to think. So our brains need oxygen, water, fat, and glucose. And this is why when you get tired after you've been doing a lot of cognitive or mental work for a long time, you start to crave a candy bar, which I wouldn't mm-hmm. recommend, and I'll explain why in a moment. But we start to crave, we get really hungry when we're doing mental work. Often, many of the listeners may notice that they're hungrier after doing solid hours of mental work than physical work, because mm-hmm. we're draining the brain of these resources. So what a very productive way to work, and the way the brain was designed to work, is to focus and rest. Now, rest is a bit of a misnomer, because the brain isn't actually at rest. We feel like we're at rest, but the brain is actually going in, activating a different network that's processing information, problem solving, integrating information, creating, embedding memory. So a lot's happening in that resting, I'm using air quotes here, in that diffuse state. If you put that resting brain into an MRI machine, it would be very active and lighting up all over the place. But from our perspective, it's kind of zoning out, gazing out the window, going for a walk, having a chat with a colleague, making a cup of tea, whatever it is that you do, but that's not focused cognitive work. So when you're looking at your work for the day, to answer your question specifically, some tasks may take longer and some shorter. Now, if you have a very big task, then you'll want to break it down. Break it into, if it's a 3-hour task, break it into 45-minute segments and take a short mental break. This will actually improve your productivity by many fold. And there's solid research behind it. There are some great studies. I think the last one I read was in the Journal of Cognition. And they showed that people who were given breaks while they were given a complex mathematical task had greater retention and problem solving and better results than the other two groups. One was a control group, and I don't recall exactly what the third group was doing, but neither of those groups had a break. And so the groups that had a break performed at a much higher level and were more productive. So this idea of working the way the brain works, right? So the brain doesn't just keep going like our technology. We tend to think that we should be able to run as long as our phones or our computers. And in fact, we probably charge our computers and our phones way more than we charge ourselves.
Absolutely.
But this idea, the idea is that our brains work in cycles, focus, diffuse, focus, diffuse. So if you follow that cycle, not only will you be more productive, perform at a higher level, experience less stress and make less errors, but you'll have more energy at the end of the day because you're not drained, right? Mm. Because that mental work is very draining. Many of us leave work at the end of the day feeling exhausted. If you incorporate this type of pattern into your day, then you may find that you're actually more energized at the end of the day. You've gotten more done and you're feeling better.
Thank you so much for, for clarifying some of that. So we hear a lot of people say, you know, I'm a morning person or I'm this kind of person. This is when I'm most productive. How do you know when you're most productive? Like what should I do in the morning? What should I do in the evening? What does that look like?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think most of us know whether we're a morning or a night person, or there are some people who are both. And this is an aspect of evolutionary biology. There's a reason that some of us are wired to perform in the morning, wired to perform in the evening, or we have this kind of all day sort of thing where we're pretty alert in the morning and alert in the evening, but we're not all nighters. Right. We're not getting up super early. So, of course, from an evolutionary perspective, the reason for that is that we lived in tribes and we needed people to be able to either stand watch or take care of certain tasks at different times of day. Right. So perhaps I'm thinking about the cows needing milking, and I think they always need milking early in the morning. I could be wrong about that. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, that's, you know, maybe the animals needed tending, so the morning people took care of that, and the night people stood watch. So we are hardwired, most of us, hardwired into one of these types. So the best thing to do is to do your deep work when you have the most energy, when you're energized, right? So I know personally that I don't do client work early in the morning because I am not a morning person. And I used to fight that, but the reality is, unfortunately, the science has supported me, and I'm delighted to learn that, in fact, it's best for us to follow our biorhythms. So I know the type of work that I do in the morning is more creative, and I spend a little time on email. And then my client work is done from 11 a.m. and onward. And then I can do actually some very deep work at night because my brain is really alert at night. So knowing that can be very helpful. Now, it can be difficult for people who have 9-to-5 jobs, and I'm using that term loosely, but who have structured hours. So what you would want to do then is do the low value tasks when you're at your lowest energy. So low value tasks are kind of our to do things are, they don't really move our purpose forward, but they have to get done. Could be filing, could be answering routine emails, the kinds of things that just have to happen but aren't critical. So do those when you're not at your most energized. Do save your deep work, save your really important work for when you're really alert. And the only way to know it, I think, is just to know how you feel when you wake up in the morning. Do you wake up and jump out of bed feeling awake and alert and great? Or does it take a while for your brain to kick in? So there are two types of people, and then those people, well, there are three, as we mentioned, but the distinction between the morning and the night people would be that usually morning people's brains kick in around 11 a.m. So that may be helpful.
Yeah, no, that's really great, because I think we put all this pressure on like having labels, right? So I'm a morning person. Is that a good thing? Is that not a good thing? When should I be doing things? But I think when we think about when we're most alert, that is really easy to understand. When am I feeling like I have the energy, as opposed to labeling my person of I'm a morning person, I'm this kind of person. It's kind of, that puts a different level of pressure, and that makes me think like, I don't know if I'm a morning or an evening person. But as you're sharing that, it's like, oh yeah, I understand. And I'm thinking about the tasks that I naturally do in the evening, and they are those things that are toward the low value end.
And there you go. Again, you knew this intuitively. Mm-hmm. You knew this intuitively, and then once it was plugged into the science, you were able to make it concrete. And so now you can actually plan your day that way and say, I know that I'm going to be less alert around this time. I'm going to do these tasks during that time. Mm-hmm. And I know that I'm more alert during these hours. This would be a good time for me to have that meeting with this potential new client, or whatever the task is that is considered important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One thing that I tune in with myself is I'm a delayed gratification person. So I enjoy writing. So sometimes I'll say, okay, I can do my writing after I do these four things that I'd really rather not do, right? So after I send my taxes off, or after I balance my finances, then I can do the writing, which will take a little bit more time, but I enjoy it a lot more. So I play that game with myself. But now, as we're talking about, so I'm more of a morning person. Well, I guess, what are your thoughts on that? Like getting different things done at different times versus kind of how am I rewarding myself with, you know, that candy bar? Or am I rewarding myself with getting the candy bar later or sooner, or writing, and then I can do the not so fun stuff, or doing the not so fun stuff and then writing? How does all that come into play?
Wow. I love that question. And what you've touched on are a few different things. One of the things that you touched on without using the word is procrastination. So many of us would prefer to, I'll do the writing, I'll do that other thing later. And why do we procrastinate? Well, we procrastinate because we're not in the mood, or because the task is objectively difficult and challenging, or because it's unpleasant. And you mentioned taxes. I also dislike doing my taxes. So what I do in that instance is, if it's a task that I dislike or is challenging and I want to put it off, what I will do is say, I can do anything for X amount of time. So I can do anything, say, for an hour. Mm-hmm. And I will give myself 1 hour to focus on that undesirable task. And then after that hour, I get to do some writing. And so it gives me something to look forward to, right? Mm-hmm. But it also empowers me, because for 1 hour, or maybe it's 20 minutes, the truth is that oftentimes that amount of time that we allocate will be more than enough. I don't really need an hour. It feels like it's going to take an hour, because if I go into it with that mood of, I don't want to do this, then it will take a long time. Mm-hmm. That's the other piece that's interesting. We have to shift into a more affirmative, willing mindset to get things done well and quickly. So our brains actually are more productive, are most productive in a relaxed, slightly happy state. So if we're in a negative or neutral state, if we're in a, oh, I don't want to do this frame of mind, that will interfere with our ability to perform and to be productive. So the first thing you want to do is shift into a more productive state, into a more affirmative, willing state. And we do this by thinking about the outcome, which you mentioned, your reward, or we can do this by thinking about, I can do anything for X amount of time. Other examples might be, this is going to be great when it's done. The benefit is going to be so fantastic that I'm willing to go through what I have to go through to get this done. So these are the kinds of things that that encourage us and help us, propel us through these difficult tasks. Procrastination is not always bad, by the way. Sometimes, and it's important to notice, right? Again, we're back to noticing and that self-awareness. Procrastination is often a creative state. So I'll notice that before I'm sitting down to do something challenging or some deep work, if I start organizing my desk or getting up and getting another cup of tea or coffee or some water, I'm aware that I'm pushing off my start time, but it's because I'm getting into a state of readiness. And that's a positive kind of procrastination. It's just getting into the right zone. So understanding that sometimes it's okay to just ease your way into something because you're revving up, you're thinking about it, you're getting ready. But the best way to overcome procrastination is to move into an affirmative mindset. What is it about getting this done? Well, first of all, what is it that I dislike about it? Identify that, name it. Again, we're moving from feeling to thinking. We're moving from this doesn't feel good or it's uncomfortable to what is it that is uncomfortable or that I don't like about it, just as we did earlier. Mm-hmm. And then address that. And so this moves us out of procrastination and into action.
I love that. And procrastination is, when in this context, what I'm hearing from you is a different way to just slow down, right? Preparing mm-hmm. yourself and getting really ready. And I had the opposite of that. Last night, I had a lecture at a school and it was from 5:30 to 7. And then I got right in a car and went to the airport. So like, I didn't have time to wrap up that lecture. Mm-hmm. Like usually I really like to talk to students after. So I felt like I didn't really give them what they needed. And then it was like, and then I was on the curb and trying to figure out where I was and how to get to the airport. And then it was to the airport, through the gate, on the plane, talked to a lovely gentleman the whole plane ride. Mm-hmm. And then I was in the car again. But it was like, I had not 1 minute to kind of realize, to notice, right? I didn't know, I didn't have any idea where I was by the time I got home, but somehow it was 5 hours after I started this lecture. And I did a lot, but that was not a pace that is maintainable by any stretch.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
It's great to just even reflect on that and say, okay, how could I set my day up different? Or how could I make sure that now that I know that, I can figure out how to handle it maybe a little bit different after. Maybe I'm starting the lecture a little earlier or booking a later flight or mm-hmm. putting headphones on as soon as I sit down on the plane. Right? How do I take care of myself?
Well, you make a great point, and you actually asked this a little earlier, and that is, what is the impact of the way we start our day? Mm-hmm. And that is important. The way we start our day does impact our productivity and our performance for the day. I think it's also important for listeners to understand that if things aren't going well, we can actually shift at any moment. We can stop. We can pause. We can address what isn't going well and turn it around, find a way to turn it around. And there are tricks and tools for doing that. But if you take a moment in the morning and set your mood and your mindset for the day, then you're already primed for a much more productive day. So what do I mean by that? Especially for a while to ease into the day. What I'll do is think about what's on my agenda for today and what do I need? So do I need to be focused, high energy? Do I need to be determined? Am I working on a project that needs progress, or am I in meetings all day so that I need to be more outgoing? Thinking about where your mood and your mindset need to be for the tasks of the day can be very, very helpful. So similar to what you were just describing, if I have a day of meetings ahead of me, but I don't put myself in a mindset of, okay, I've got this, I'm ready, I'm taking it on, I might find myself dragging and bumping up against some difficulties as I'm going through these meetings. So taking that moment to pause and set ourselves up is really beneficial.
It's interesting that you share that. I am reminded of, I was in a position of leaving a role at one point in my career, and I had told myself, I had a new boss, and it wasn't a great fit with the new boss. And I had told myself, I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave all my friends. I love the work, and it's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair. Mm-hmm. And I remember the moment, like I know exactly where I was sitting when I went, of course I want to leave. Like, my friends don't disappear. The work doesn't disappear. This isn't the right fit. And I want to find a place that's the right fit. And I think like within a week I had had a new job, but I was so stuck in that place of, I don't want to, I don't want to. And like, what did I want to hang on to? I didn't want to hang out in a job that wasn't the right fit, but I couldn't figure out how to get myself out of it. And it didn't happen through a thoughtful process. It was kind of like a light bulb moment, but mm-hmm. that light bulb moment really, really mattered for me when I got to just say, no, there's a thing I'm reaching toward as opposed to the thing I'm pushing away from, or like, oh, I'm going to have to do this thing.
Oh, I love that. I love that idea of, what is that thing I'm reaching toward? Mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. very, very useful for all of us to take a moment and remind ourselves, especially when the going gets tough, what is that thing I'm reaching toward? What's motivating me? And it has to be an intrinsic motivator. It can't just be, I need more money. And I need more money is valid and legitimate, and we should progress in our careers. If that's the only motivator, the next job is going to be as dissatisfying as the previous one. Mm-hmm. It's really important to identify our intrinsic motivators. What is moving me forward? What makes me want to do what I'm doing? And if I don't want to do it, then what are the qualities of a job that I would like to have? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how that shows up. And the reason I say this is, some people think it's, you know, it's magic. No, it's actually where we place our attention. So mm-hmm. If I'm not searching for a car, I don't pay attention to the cars on the road. But the minute I decide that I need a new car, all of a sudden I'm seeing all these cars that look interesting to me, mm-hmm. right? So it's the same yeah. thing with a job search. If I'm not looking for a job, a lot of things could be going on out there in the world and I'm not paying attention to them. But mm-hmm. if I say I'm interested in a new position and these are the qualities I'd like it to have, all of a sudden we're having conversations with people and we're talking about these things. And mm-hmm. sorry?
No, I said it's unreal, isn't it? Pardon me.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That's exactly right. It starts to generate these conversations, and people start saying, well, you should maybe speak to so-and-so, and oh, I heard about a position like that, and things start to show up. So yeah. it's very important for us to identify what is motivating us, what's moving us forward. So thank you for bringing that up. That was a great observation.
Yeah. And it all ties in. I know that we had talked about, and you talk about, the three M's, and we've mm-hmm. talked about that a great deal during this last few questions, is, you know, what is going on with your mood, your mindset, and your motivation? How can you tune into those three things right at the beginning of the day and set yourself yes. up for success?
Yes, 100%. That's exactly what drives our productivity and our performance. Well, let's put it another way. They interfere with our productivity and performance if we don't pay attention to them. Mm. So if I'm working and I'm not paying attention to the fact that I'm not in a very good mood, that is going to affect my performance. Mm-hmm. So we need to be aware of our mood, our mindset, and our motivation, Because if we're not, it is having a, don't want to say a negative impact, but it's having an impact and maybe not the best. Right. So important to notice. And why not take charge, right? Mm-hmm. Why not be in charge? Take control. Feel like you've got a handle on it. Nothing's more productive than knowing that we're the ones who are in charge. And it lowers our stress too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those are the things that you can control when it feels like there's a lot that's out of your control.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Great. Well, I'm so happy that we had you on the show today. It was such a pleasure to chat. And as we're winding down the show, I wonder if we're thinking about, you know, busy, being productive, how to be the most productive that we can be in job search and beyond. Do you have any final tips or things that you'd like the listeners to leave with?
Sure. My favorites, here are a few of them. One is do one thing at a time. Focus on one thing at a time. Avoid the distractions. You talked about turning off your notifications. That is so powerful. So focus on one thing at a time. Then take a mental break. A short mental break. It doesn't have to be long. It can literally be 1 minute. In fact, you can set a timer for 60 seconds. Take a quick mental break and then go back to what you're doing. So focus on one thing at a time. Take a mental break. Drink water. Water literally conducts the electrical energy that we need to think. And without water, if we become dehydrated, our cognition, our ability to think declines rapidly. Just a 1% dehydration is associated with a 5% decline in cognitive function. So keep sipping water throughout the day. Yeah, it's a big wow. That's why, you know, we hear all the time, why drink water? Oh, you know, well, we're constantly losing water. Even just speaking, when we breathe, we're losing water. We lose water through sweat. We lose water in myriad ways. But all of our bodily functions, our brain and all of our physiology needs water. So drink throughout the day, hydrate. I teach a class and all of my students who were experiencing headaches notice that their headaches went away when they drank more water. We always do this experiment in my class. And so drink water, focus on one thing at a time, take those breaks, pay attention, notice to your mood, notice your mood, your mindset, and your motivation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I've got.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. As we were talking, I've been taking all these notes and I really appreciate all the tips that you've shared.
My pleasure.
So for the people that are listening, thank you. We will have a little bio for Judith so you can check out her website and more information about her, of course, more for me. And I have lots and lots of articles on my website as well. So there's value in this podcast and radio show, but there's also lots and lots of value that Judith and I can share even beyond this chat. So thank you, Judith, for joining, and thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm wishing you all a successful search. Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.